This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tye. Thank you so much for tuning in today. The health of Milwaukee's rivers is improving, albeit slowly. Earlier this month, the third annual report card from the group Milwaukee Riverkeeper gave the quality of the Milwaukee River Basin a C-. It's a low score, but actually a slight improvement over the D-plus given to the 900 square miles of the KK, Menominee, and Milwaukee River watersheds. The authors of the report point to chronic water quality impairment, thanks in part to remnants of legacy contaminants released well before the Clean Water Act was crafted. There are actually several area organizations who are actively monitoring river quality and seeking to improve the letter grade on the next report card, as WUWM environmental reporter Susan Bentz reports.
Cheryl Nunn coordinates more than 80 volunteers who troll the Milwaukee, Menominee, and KK watersheds. Milwaukee Riverkeeper started the citizen monitoring program back in 2006, adding some standardization where little existed.
We have a multi-structured program where we bring in volunteers kind of at an introductory level and train them how to use more simple equipment and in kind of the biology and the techniques that are necessary. And then we elevate them to an advanced program. And in that program, people are using essentially DNR equivalent equipment and DNR protocols, and they even get a login where they can put their data directly into the DNR database. So we set up several years setting up the program, and then in 2010 decided, you know, we need to do a much better job of actually disseminating that information to the public and trying to make it understandable what we're finding in the river, what the river's telling us, and what they can do to help us get to where we want to be, which is, you know, a clean, fishable, swimmable river.
Nunn acknowledges that the challenge of conveying the complexity of the basin's water quality is made even trickier because the most up-to-date report reflects data from 2 years ago.
We've had some people wondering why it's taking so long, why we haven't released the 2013. And it kind of goes to what I was talking about before. It takes us a while to do quality assurance on the data to make sure that the data is correct. We also, in addition to our citizen data, we do collect DNR data, as well as MMSD data. And MMSD also goes through a long process to make sure that their data is accurate.
How do you check that?
Part of it is just making sure what's in the system matches up with what's in the data sheet that was taken in the field. Part of it on our end is also visiting our volunteers with redundant sets of equipment to make sure that when they're going out there, in a lot of cases with meters, you know, looking at oxygen and pH, and that we're getting the same result.
Nunn says looking back at 2012, the basin's baby step improvement from D-plus to C-minus likely resulted from an extremely dry summer rather than human effort.
In a lot of different ways, the water quality was improved, I think, because of the drought.
Why would drought improve the water quality?
Oh, that's a good question. So in a lot of our really urban watersheds in particular, they're very dominated by urban runoff. So basically stormwater that's running off the street and, you know, off of our yards and our homes and, you know, going into the storm drains and then dumping into the river. And so when there is less runoff, because we don't have a lot of rain, there's a lot less urban runoff into the river. So I think that partially explains why we saw improvement.
Nunn is quick to add, Milwaukee's three watersheds continue to be hit by multiple pollutants, including phosphorus.
And phosphorus comes from fertilizers. A lot of that has actually been phased out of residential fertilizers now, but the farmers still are able to use phosphorus in their fertilizers and in some cases golf courses. Even in a drought year, you know, we would have thought, or hoped actually, that we would have saw some, you know, improvements in phosphorus because there wasn't as much rain. But we still had, you know, a lot of major phosphorus problems in 2012. And I think some of that is because, you know, there's still a lot of it just in the system that's like hanging out in the sediments. And the rivers, in a lot of cases, because there wasn't rain, were warmer than normal. And so that did cause a lot of nuisance algae blooms in 2012 that I have to say were pretty significant. We had a really significant algae problem on the lower Menominee, which I think a lot of people will remember. Probably the worst I've seen in 12 years. Where we like to see a downward trajectory in a lot of our pollutants, we're seeing upward ones.
Bacteria levels from human waste, Nunn says, are up. Suspended solids, such as sediment and other debris, threatens critters that live in streams and the streams themselves. Nunn says you can see its culprit on our snow-covered urban landscape.
You know, a lot of times in the spring and the summer, you don't notice it as much because it rains and all of that stuff washes down the drains and goes right into the waterways. You know, when you really drive down the street right now, you just see the blackness that's out there and how really, you know, gross the roads get and the sidewalks and everything. You know, a lot of that dirt's coming just from the land. You know, it's coming from urban land uses. A very high percentage in the Milwaukee Basin is construction, huge loads of sediment in construction sites that aren't well managed and maintained. And in some cases in the upper Milwaukee, still quite a lot of sediment from agricultural use as well.
But Nunn says there are positive stories. Upstream, banks are being stabilized, while downstream, stretches of cement channels are being removed. A regulatory framework is also in the works that Nunn says will put our rivers on a pollution diet. It's called TMDL.
It means total maximum daily load, a federally approved plan that's binding by law, basically saying, okay, we're not meeting standards for phosphorus, and we're not meeting standards for bacteria, and we're not meeting standards for sediment. As part of that effort, we've really been able to target where there needs to be pollutant reductions in different portions of the river to meet these standards. There's a lot of different groups, the DNR and MMSD and a lot of different stakeholders that have been working on these TMDLs along with a lot of nonprofits to come up with these plans. So entities that do discharge pollutants into the river, whether it's a municipality or a company, are going to get new limits put into their permits eventually that will help us ratchet this pollution down. I think that's really exciting. So over time, we'll be able to really focus our money and our efforts to reducing the pollutants to get them to a level where, we think they're going to be safe to be used.
As the TMDL program rolls out, Nunn says Milwaukee Riverkeepers volunteers will continue to test and monitor their assigned stretch of the basin. She takes the long view on the time it might take to transform the Milwaukee River Basin to a fishable, swimmable state. So, too, does Kimberly Gleffy with the River Revitalization Foundation, or RRF. Her office sits at the southern edge of a community-driven effort to create 870 acres of trails and restored habitat called the Milwaukee River Greenway. She says its implementation will stretch out for decades, but Gleffy already feels its cumulative effects.
Every improvement we make in the river valley will improve water quality. So I think Riverkeepers Report Card and River Revitalization Foundation's land restoration, habitat restoration, and shoreline restoration is only going to enhance habitat and improve the water quality of the river.
RRF's most recent tangible step is a one-mile stretch of path.
We received an easement from Milwaukee Area Technical College, where their solar farm is. And once we had the easement recorded, then we went in, we had to do a trail design and get the permit from the DNR, and then we went in with Student Conservation Association and volunteers and students to actually physically construct the trail.
The process stretched out over 2 years.
Probably the longest amount of time is negotiating an easement and getting that all approved legally. Once you have the easement and all the permits, the trail was constructed in like a month.
Aaron Zaleski has just come on board to help take the Greenway vision a step or two further.
Implementing signage, working with landowners to close gaps in the trails, working towards a habitat plan and doing ecological restoration and coordinating that throughout the whole 800 plus acres.
Meanwhile, conservation biologist Gary Casper is working to regenerate wildlife hard hit before the river's revitalization. Casper specializes in amphibians and reptiles. He started taking inventory of snakes on the Milwaukee River over 6 years ago, but says he's learned a lot since.
Well, first of all, there's only three species, which is not good. I mean, there should be more. So things like water snakes have disappeared from the riverway, but potentially could be brought back. So the snakes we are finding are the Butler's garter snake, the common garter snake, and the brown snake. And these are typical urban snakes that are pretty tolerant of development and manage to persist. But in this situation, the Butler's garter snakes outnumber everybody else. Then the brown snakes and the common garters are real rare. So we've marked, several hundred garter snakes, and we're learning more about their movement patterns, how long they live, how fast they grow.
Casper also implanted about 40 garters with reflector tags he tracks with radar.
So we were able to walk around with this radar unit and try to find the blips, and we're finding snakes in situations that we had never found them in before.
Including in the woods, rather than the grass, where they're normally found. And they're feeding on things that are affected by water pollution.
Well, the Butlers eat almost exclusively earthworms. Okay. Which in this situation are probably highly contaminated with toxic sediments that they eat. So it's been interesting to see how the snakes can feed on this contaminated earthworms and still have good population.
Snakes, of course, are just one piece of the ecological puzzle Casper looks at from two endpoints. What did the habitat look like before Milwaukee became Milwaukee, and compare it to what's left today, with an eye toward creating a habitat plan?
Try to figure out what we can do to improve things, increase biodiversity, get some more of these species that people really like to have around actually living and breeding here. So like with the frog community, went from, we suspect, 8 species pre-settlement to 2 today. Salamanders went from, we suspect, 4 species pre-settlement to none today. So those are groups of organisms that we could reestablish. There's just certain things that have to be done to support them, which aren't here right now.
So what would have to be done, Gary?
Well, with the amphibians mainly, it's about getting some of these wetlands back, especially the temporary isolated wetlands that they breed in. There's a few spots we've started to identify where it seems feasible, but it'll take stakeholders to come together and make it happen.
It makes you wonder what kind of impact Casper's vision would have on a future report card. For Like Effect, I'm Susan Benz.
Susan Benz is WUWM's environmental reporter. She spoke with conservation biologist Gary Casper, Kimberly Gleffy, and Aaron Zaleski of the River Revitalization Foundation, and Cheryl Ment with Milwaukee Riverkeeper. A unique sports facility is looking to get off the ground in the Milwaukee area, and we are not talking about a potential replacement for the BMO Harris-Bradley Center. We will hear what we are talking about next on Lake Effect from WUWM.